Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Do you remember the 90s? You know, people were talking about getting piercings and getting tribal tattoos, and people were singing about saving the planet and forming bands. There's a place where that idea still exists as a reality, and I've been there. It's this podcast. Okay, we're here on Rockin' the Suburbs. It's me, Jim Lenihan. We do not have Patrick Foster. He's off this week. I decided to be gracious and give him the week off so he can go and enjoy other things, probably reorganizing his record collection autobiographically. But anyway, last couple days, I've been visiting with some old friends, talking about music we grew up with, and today I have from Rockford, Illinois, where I lived in the early to mid-90s, I have my friend Will Pfeiffer. Hey, Will.
Hey, Jim.
And Will's been on before. It's been a while, but and Will is the guy who does the Out of Theaters movie podcast, or did,
right.
Or does, or...
We did. We're, it's in, you know, unlike Rockin' the Suburbs, our podcast is in flux every now and then, so it's one of the flux periods.
Not 5 days a week.
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's a whole other thing. We'll get into that later. But the so let me set this up here. So this actually is really good because yesterday we were talking with my friend Tom Nord, who was a great college friend, and he really set this up nicely today without any prompting. He talked about how after we graduated college, we were like, you know, it was so interesting how the decade just kind of switched from the 80s to the 90s right at that time, and how we didn't really even quite understand what was about to happen in the, you know, rock music world in the 90s. And that's where we are in the story today, right? So Will and I started at the our first jobs out of college was at the newspaper there in Rockford, the Register Star, and Rockford, of course, the home of Cheap Trick. And that's the big music claim to fame. But my point being, you start also in 1990?
I started like January 8th. So it was like, you know, I mean, literally I graduated college at the very end of the 80s and I started the workforce at the very beginning of the 90s.
So January, so okay.
Perfect this, decade.
Yeah. This makes sense to me. Okay, so you started in January of 90. I started in February.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both newbies at the paper. And I remember... Tell me what your... I'm curious to hear what your impression of this was, but I can remember there was a bit of a culture shock for me because, you know, coming from Indiana University, which was like this... In Bloomington, Indiana, which was like this total, like, prototypical college town USA, and in all the best ways because, you know, we had, like, cool bands that came through town, and you just had that critical mass of, like, youth that would attract that kind of thing, right? And... You know,
right.
Cool record stores, cool, you know, live music, that sort of thing. And then I go to Rockford, which was a very Midwestern sort of Rust Belt, you know, blue collar sort of town, right? Without any of that sort of influence. And I just remember thinking how am I going to get that fixed? Of course, we could go to Chicago, we could go to Madison, Wisconsin, stuff like that. But the real way to do it was to meet up with people who shared your interest, right? And I think,
if
for you and I and a couple other people, that's what came to pass, right?
Very much. I mean, I went to Kent State, which is smaller than Indiana, but, you know, we still got bands coming through town. It was a college setting. And when you get to Rockford, it was, you know, there would be concerts in Rockford because we had the Metro Center, which is now the BMO Bank Center. And famously, though it's insane to imagine now, but when they first opened in the early 80s, back long before we were there, the Rolling Stones played there.
I know.
Which is like a legendary concert.
Because people, you have to understand, the Metro Center was a downtown arena, but it was, but because of the size of the city, it wasn't like the United Center in Chicago. It was about half size, right? It was maybe about 10,000 seats as opposed to 20.
Maybe. I mean, the local... You know, basketball teams and hockey teams would play there and that kind of a thing. Or they'd have like a RV show or that kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it was impressive that we had it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But you would get some decent tours that came through there. Probably the best show I saw Well, you and I went to see Cheap Trick there. They played.
Right, we saw Cheap Trick
there.
You
and I and Bob. Mm-hmm. But I also saw AC/DC there. I mean, that's pretty
cool. That's right. And I wish I had gone to that show because that would have been good. And, you know, not too long ago, a couple of years ago, and I kicked myself for not going, Fountains of Wayne played there as the opening act for Matchbox 20. And I don't know why I didn't go because now, of course, it's too late. But and I believe we saw a concert there. Who was the White Sox player who had a band in the
Well, that was
who was it? Jack McDowell? No,
Jack McDowell. Jack McDowell.
Jack McDowell. Okay, yes. We saw his band.
He's a pitcher, right? But he played like a show after like a minor league basketball game.
Yes,
it was like like watch the Rockford Lightning. And then, stick around afterward and you see, Jack McDowell's band. Anyway, but that's a whole other thing. My point being, the Metro Center, for being a 10,000 seat, roughly 10,000 seat venue, whatever, would still attract pretty big tours, right? And there was also the Coronado Theater, which was this nice historic theater, right? And
I think I saw Cheap Trick there too. Okay. I think I saw him there as well.
I saw Bob Dylan there. I mean,
that'd be a good place to see Bob Dylan.
So there were some. The occasional like big artist would come through town, but what we didn't have was that tier of like the cool bands, right?
There was no the bands venue we were most that. Interested in.
That's right. There was no kind of venue for that. For that, you had to go into Chicago,
right?
So my point being, like, for us, I guess it was a lot of just like listening to records, right? I mean, that's what we did, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there were record stores back then, and I mean, I remember. You know, that's back when, I mean, like, you know, there was some carryover from college, like Sonic Youth. You know, I was listening to a lot of Sonic Youth, and the Replacements were still going, and of course, Nirvana was kicking up. They Might Be Giants were all these, you know, REM was still somewhat interesting. I don't know. I kind of lost interest in REM at a certain point, but, you know, early 90s REM.
What do you remember of that time? Because, like, as I was saying, I was talking with Tom yesterday and that sort of 91 explosion. Did you like that? Did you like that when these bands all became popular? Or did you sort of feel, I don't know, that,
you know, some backlash to it?
I don't know.
There was a little backlash. I mean, you know, like, I remember when Nirvana, I think you and I or something went to like Best Buy and bought Nevermind or something.
I think so,
and like, and it was like, and people were saying, they had albums out before, but people were saying like, this is going to be huge. You could kind of feel like it building and everyone was getting that album. And, I mean, it was kind of exciting, like for a brief period, the kind of music that we liked was the music that sort of everyone, I mean, it's so cliched now, but the early 90s, you know, there was a lot of flannel and grunge and goofy stocking caps and, you know, all that kind of thing. And I was never a huge grunge. I mean, I like Nirvana and I like some other bands, but I was never really, I kind of got tired of that sound after a while. I was always more like poppy punk stuff and, you know, the Replacements, who I think we saw twice when we were in Rockford, once at Milwaukee and once in Chicago.
That's right. Twice on that same tour, I think.
It was on the All Shook Down tour, I think, right?
Yeah.
And that was interesting because they were getting like video, you know, they were getting videos on MTV, which is something they had sort of fought against or screwed up against. You know, however the replacements failed to become popular. This was as popular as they were sort of getting.
Well, I want to say one point I want to make about grunge that I think now people might have this perspective. I don't know, but I kind of even at the time always thought Nirvana was different from a lot of those other bands.
I would agree. Like, yeah.
You know, the grunge to me, the grunge was like the sort of that muddier, low end kind of sound, and very sludgy,
like Mudhoney, and
I like that,
you know,
stuff.
Bands like that.
But they were doing. Nirvana was more of a pop band, really.
I mean,
and they were brighter.
Smells Like Teen Spirit is a very poppy song. It just has that overlay of harshness, but it's full of hooks, and it's, yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, so I almost think of them as an outlier now, but I remember just being kind of excited, like, hey, this scene, whatever it is,
right,
is now, like, is growing, and people, you know, I guess... I was never really quite one of those people who was like so possessive of the music I liked. I suppose I kind of wanted people to appreciate it. I didn't want it to just be popular for like being a fad or popularity's sake. But at the same time, I did want more people to like the music I liked, you know?
Oh, sure.
You know, it's like,
and I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, probably my favorite band of all time is the Ramones, and who were still playing in the 90s. And I saw them at Lollapalooza. Outside of Rockford at the fairgrounds in the whatever year that 93, 94, maybe whenever the Lollapalooza tour had them on it. But, you know, the Ramones were really a bubblegum pop band.
Yes.
And they wanted nothing more than to be huge hits. You know, they wanted to be popular, and it just, you know, it didn't happen until they were all dead essentially. And Blitzkrieg Bop is on every commercial, but yeah, I mean, there is that feeling of you have that band you really like. Like when I was in college, I just loved REM. But then as soon as they hit a certain point, I was kind of, on the one hand, good for you guys. On the other, it's kind of like you feel like, oh, my special thing is, which is selfish ultimately, but.
Well, they also really changed their sound a lot. I don't think they did it to sell out. I don't believe
that
to be the case either. I just think they evolved, and they didn't want to keep playing that like sort of mumbly jangle stuff anymore. And they wanted to do other things. But and it just, the timing worked where it just.
Because I saw them in college, and I remember, you know, they were kind of a cult band, you know, and then they were they became one of the most popular rock bands in the world, essentially.
Yes. So let me ask you this. So what was your, trying to remember this, like, what was your feeling in your early 20s just about music in general? Because I think about this from time to time. We're Generation X, right? So,
right.
Do you think there was a difference with us than, say, previous generations or what have you, in terms of like our relationship with music as we became like independent adults out on our own? Do you know what I'm
adults
saying? You know what I mean?
I wonder if, for one thing, I think one thing Generation X really did was MTV hit when we were like just starting our sort of music odyssey. So I think that shaped a lot in both, you know, a lot of bands, especially bands I liked in high school and stuff, like, you know, like like Men at Work we've talked about. I mean, you know, they were a good band, I think, and I love them. And without MTV, I probably never would have heard of them.
Right.
But I also wonder if being the classic Generation X, and this obviously doesn't go for everyone, is we also have the certain – we grew up with such inundated with marketing that we have this suspicion of I'm being marketed to, so I'm going to look for something more obscure. And maybe that ties into when a band gets popular,
yeah,
I'm going to stop liking them, even if it has nothing to do with the quality of the band or the music. You know, like, I mean – you know, I knew you were a big Replacements fan, and I was a huge Replacements fan. And I think one of the reasons the Replacements appeal to Generation X is they just completely burn out. You know, you've read the book about them, and they had several times when they really could have gone to that next level, and they almost self-sabotage themselves constantly. And that's a very stereotypically Generation X kind of thing to sort of admire in a twisted way, I think.
They're a complex band, and Paul in particular is a complex person in that regard because, I know lots of Replacements fans. They're probably, if not my favorite band, they're definitely a top five for me.
Yeah, same here.
But there's a lot of fans who are like, why, you know, Paul Westbrook was such a great songwriter. Why aren't these songs take a song like Can't Hardly Wait, for example. Like, that song should be huge. Everybody should know that song. It should be as big as Smells Like Teen Spirit or whatever, right?
It is. It's a perfect little pop. It's actually more accessible than Smells Like Teen Spirit, really.
I agree. There's so much of that. But at the same time, the fans are also kind of like, they also like the fact that the band sort of, you know, thumbed its nose at the music industry at all turns. And it's like, you can't really have it both ways. I mean,
no, you can't. I mean, if you're going to hit it big, you gotta play the game. I mean, that's,
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles aren't the most popular band in the world because they were constantly rebelling against success. I mean,
that's right. So, but I guess my point was sort of, I don't know how to say this exactly, but I think about like our parents, right? Like, I think, you know, my dad was never really that into music anyway. But I also think there was a feeling that like, once you like were in your 20s and like you in a real job, that was kid stuff, that music was kid, like rock and roll music was kid
stuff. Especially rock and roll. Right.
Yeah. And you're supposed to leave that behind and you're supposed to, you know, grow up. Like, it was like the same thing of like, you know, your toys go in the attic, right? Yeah. It's like,
or you your know, video. I mean, can you imagine our parents playing video games?
Right. Right.
I mean, it would never happen. And, you know, I remember asking my mom, because my mom was born in 41, which would have made her like 23 when the Beatles broke in America. And I asked her, I said, did you listen to the Beatles? And she said, no, they were like a band for kids.
Right.
You know, I mean, she was already at an age where that was, no, I'm not interested.
Right. Right. So I guess for me, though, you know, sort of like taking that step out into the world on my own, I don't know. I felt like I kind of needed, like I needed music to get me through all of that stuff.
Oh, I think so. I mean? And like, and I mean, I, you know, I, when I was in high school, I listened to, you know, a lot of, you know, like Huey Lewis, you know, I mean, a lot of what everyone listened to, and Van Halen and, you know, this and that. And, but when I got to college, I met some friends who really, I mean, they didn't literally take me aside, but it's almost like they took me aside and said, you know, here's the Replacements, here's the New York Dolls, here's this and this. And then, you know, same with you when, you know, you knew more, a lot more about music than I did. So when you would say like, hey, you want to go see this band, They Might Be Giants or something in the Metro, it's like, yeah, let's go. And, you know, and so,
right.
And it felt like when I would hear a band like that, it just felt right. It's like, oh, these guys have been waiting for me to discover them.
Right.
Like,
right.
They've been out there and they were, I was meant to hear this band.
They might be giants.
Boy.
They might be giants.
They might be rain.
They might be giants.
Boy.
They might be giants.
They might be rain. They might be wash. They might be Dr. Spock's backup man.
To make the merry-go-round go fast, so that everyone needs to hang on tighter, just to keep from being thrown to the wolves.
Tabloid footprints in your hair. Tabloid footprints.
Now, you were always a big, way more into movies than right. I was. You know, I know something about movies, but not clearly, you know, not into it like you are. But I want to talk a little bit about this, the movies versus music, let's say. It's going to be a, what we call it, three-point stance.
Okay, three-point stance. Ohio versus Ohio.
Yeah, inside joke. We won't get into that. But anyway, let's just talk about, you know, art forms, right? So what is it that you love mm-hmm. about movies so much?
I like the visual aspect, obviously. But I also like, you know, they have 2 hours or less. They're going to tell you a complete story. I mean, forget, you know, Marvel and sequels and that. But I mean, it's, you know, they have 2 hours to tell their story. And I think when a movie does that well, it's one of the perfect, it's like a 3-minute pop song. It's just like a perfect singular work of art. And movies, you know, they have, you know, there's all the elements. There's acting, there's script, there's the visuals, there's the music, there's maybe special effects, or it's just how it hits you at a certain time. And, you know, I haven't been to a theater in like a year
because 9 months
or something.
Yeah.
Right. But I used to go, I mean, I've heard people say like, I would never go to a movie alone. It's like, I've been to so many movies alone just because, not because, you know, just because there's something I wanted to see and either nobody else wanted to see it or I just didn't even care if they wanted to see it. It's like, I just want to experience this myself.
I mean, it's also a reflection of your sad life, Will. So let's.
It is. Well, there is that. Yes, there is that. And I haven't done this in a while, but.
I've been to movies by myself, and I actually think it's an enjoyable experience. You can, like, really just sit there and take it in, but.
You don't have to worry about people. I mean, it's a great thing to go to movies with friends and all laugh at it together, but I went to see David Lynch's Mulholland Drive. This is back in 2000 or 2001. And I knew my wife didn't want to go see it and nobody else wanted to go see it. So I went to a late show and it was just an amazing experience because when it was over, I was just kind of left with this thing in my head now. And it kind of, you know, walked out into the night and sorted it out. And that was a great experience.
What I was going to say is nowadays in the modern movie theaters, which I really quite enjoy, the ones that have like the recliners in them now and stuff like that, you almost feel like you're sitting by yourself. It's like there's so much space between you and the next person nowadays.
Oh, it's so different. I mean, because we used to go and, you know, they weren't even tiered. They were just, you know, they were kind of a little slant to them. And
here's the thing I'll say about movies. To me, it seems impossible. Like the whole idea of making a movie and all the things that go into it and have to go right to be as good as, say, like your favorite movie is The Apartment, right? Like to be that, think of all the things that could have gone wrong. You can say this about any movie, right? Like, everything.
Even movies that aren't that good. Right. I mean, so many things had to go right just for it to be viewable.
To be there. Right. Exactly. Like it seems like an insane endeavor to me and nearly impossible. But music, on the other hand, again, there's varying degrees of quality, but like I can sit down with my Casio keyboard and I can play a song and nowadays with recording technology, like I can record it if I want, like in my home. And, you know, people in, you know, the poorest people in South America or Africa or whatever make music. You know what I'm saying? Like it's you don't have to have a whole apparatus behind you to create music. And that's the thing I really love about it. And the other thing I love about it too is once you've seen a movie, I'm not saying there aren't movies that don't bear repeat viewings, but once you've seen it, it's a totally different experience when you've seen it again.
Exactly.
But I feel like with a good song, I can listen to it hundreds of times probably. And maybe I feel a little bit different every time or I discover something new or whatever, but sometimes I even feel like I'm hearing it for the first time again. You know what I mean? Like it's
an amazing
thing.
Or it takes
you
back to when you did hear it for the first
time.
Like I feel like, oh, I'm in college again or whatever.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. 2 points on that. One is, though it's still definitely not as simple as, or not, I'm not saying simple talent wise, but just simple technologically to make a movie. You know, now you can essentially make a movie with your phone and people have, and it's interesting to do that. And the other thing is, it's funny you would say, how you see movies is just impossible because I know what you're saying and I agree with you, but I've read so much about movies that I know the basic, like I know how a movie gets made. You know, I know this process of screenwriting and the process of filming and casting and editing and sound mixing and all that. But the thing is, as much as I listen to music, I still, to me, I don't quite understand how like a song is written.
Yeah.
There's something about, I admire it and I great for people who can do it, but I just don't quite get it, and I love that kind of magic about it.
Okay, so the Ramones. Let's talk about the Ramones for a second. So that's your favorite band.
Gun to my head, which has yet to happen, but may someday. I would say, yeah, my favorite.
It's a good choice. We don't talk about the Ramones enough on this podcast. I don't know why. Because
I think every time I've been on, I've talked about
it. Well, you should. Because they're unbelievable. And I will just say the thing I love about the Ramones so much is that they figured out like what is the best things about pop and rock music. And then they just emphasize that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Throw all the other stuff. And
yeah,
just
it's
do
like
that.
AC/DC where people say like, yeah. Oh, they play the same song every time, which is not true for AC/DC, but it's especially not true for the Ramones. I mean, you can tell a Ramones song instantly, but every one of their songs is not Blitzkrieg Bop.
No.
I mean, they knew, you know, but they're all poppy. They don't, I mean, they have a few songs that maybe slightly verge on a ballad kind of, but they still have that energy and fun. I mean, to me, the Ramones, they're just fun. It's just fun to listen to. You know, they're going to be, they're in, they're out, they're short. It's just stripped down bubblegum rock and roll.
Oh, totally. No, that's what I'm saying. Joey and Johnny and Dee Dee, they all just like had this sense of like if you were to strip away all the other stuff, this is the core of the song. This is the part that we really, really like. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to make that part better. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, Joey always said that, you know, what inspired Blitzkrieg Bop was the Bay City Rollers. You know, it was the Saturday night chant. And
that's right.
They wanted a song with a chant. And so there it is. And I mean, you know, I've listened to every, you know, I have all their albums. And, you know, you go from the first song on Ramones, which happens to be Blitzkrieg Bop, to the last song on whatever on Adios Amigos. And it's different, but it's all of a piece. And it's all, you know, the same band. And I've seen them a couple times in concert. And, you know, they knew how to put on a show.
All right, let's get out of here. Thanks very much, Will.
Hey, thank you. This was a great fun. Oh, man.
This was great. All right, yeah, so... if anybody wants to comment on any of this stuff that we discussed, you can do that. You can call and leave a message. We'll put your voice on an upcoming episode. It's 612-440-1984. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at suburbspod. All right. Thanks, man. Have a good holidays. Stay safe. Hope everybody's doing well.
You're here.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan, and with us has been
Will Pfeiffer.
And we'll talk to you all later.
You know, the one other music from the 90s that I'm almost ashamed to admit that I liked and still continue to like is, I may be the only guy who misses that whole lounge music revival. Not so much the swing one, but I like bought so many like Les Baxter and Martin Denny and all these albums, and I still listen to them. I really fell in love with that stuff.